On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
If you're a Christian or if you've been around Christians for a long time, you've probably heard a lot of myths and half-truths about Christianity, and perhaps you're not exactly sure how to answer them, or they seem so absurd to you that you don't answer them at all. But honest inquiries or misconceptions need to be corrected so that people can understand the truth about the faith. Here to talk to us today is Dr. Jeffrey Burton Russell, who is Professor Emeritus of History at the University of California, Santa Barbara. He also taught at the University of Mexico, at Harvard, the University of California, Riverside, Notre Dame, and California State University, Sacramento. He has published numerous books and articles in his area of expertise, which is the history of theology. He was honored as a Fulbright Fellow, a Harvard Junior Fellow, and Guggenheim Fellow early in his academic career. His newest book is Exposing Myths About Christianity, a guide to answering 145 viral lies and legends. It's from InterVarsity Press, or IBP Books, which is a division of InterVarsity Press. Jeffrey, great to have you on the bookshelf today.
Thank you very much, Dave. Glad to be with you.
What is the misconception that you hear the most often?
Well, I think the biggest general misconception in this country and in Europe is that Christianity is old-fashioned and dying out. It's declining. That's sort of half true and half not true. Where Christianity is declining is in, particularly in Europe, even to some extent in the United States. So the people who are against Christianity can say, well, it's old-fashioned, it's dying out, and there are various reasons for that. But the other side of the equation is that Christianity, in fact, is growing very rapidly. If you compare 100 years ago, there were approximately 750 million Christians on the planet, and there are now over 2 billion. Christianity is obviously growing. Now, we're growing very rapidly. Where is it growing? It's growing in Africa, in Asia, in South America, and even in places like China. So as a whole, Christianity is, in fact, spreading rapidly and growing rapidly. But we're faced here in Europe and this country with a kind of a bias and prejudice on the part of the intellectual elite that is dying out. Well, it isn't.
A lot of people get things confused about what is really Christian doctrine and what isn't. And even in America, all the polls talk very much about how Americans pray at a large extent. We believe in God or a higher power. More than half of us go to church or synagogue on a regular basis and so forth. But there are also kind of goofy syncretistic things that have gotten mixed in with Christianity, especially in the West over the last 50 years or so. One of them that drives me the most crazy, I think, is this idea that reincarnation is okay, and that somehow the Bible supports it, which is absolutely not true. Do you get a lot of that?
You get some of it. I think there are a couple of points to be made about it. Number one, you're absolutely right. There is no foundation, whatever, in the Bible or in all of Christian tradition from the Bible on down to the 21st century. There is no place for reincarnation at all. Okay, that's I think the most important thing to realize. And then the other point is that the next point is, why do we have this growing interest in reincarnation? And I think that's because of the growing on the one hand, growing secularization of Western civilization, and on the other hand, a growing relativism where people want to say, well, every religion is just as good as every other religion, and any religious idea is just as good as any other. And, you know, that brings us into cults. We have had so many cults lately. And it also brings us into this kind of a thing where people can kind of pick and choose as to what they believe in various religions. Well, you know, this is good from Christianity, and that's good from Buddhism, and that's good from something else, and so forth, and Hinduism and so forth. So the idea of reincarnation has kind of come in with the, I guess, yeah, it has definitely come in as part of the New Age movement. And, some Christians seem to want to include that in their Christianity, and there's absolutely no grounds for that at all. It is not a Christian idea, and it cannot be incorporated into Christianity.
We get blamed for a lot of things, too. For example, and goofy things are attributed to us. This is one that I have heard so many times. People say that, what's bad about the church is it's so anti-science. And as a perfect example, Galileo was persecuted by the church for saying that the earth revolved around the sun, and because most medieval Christians thought the earth was flat, and they didn't want to believe that it wasn't flat. And all of that is absolutely wrong. When you look at the early scientists who were Christians and who got involved in science because they wanted to prove that there is an intelligent design behind it all, that alone debunks a lot of those things. But talk to us a little bit about this misunderstanding, the misconception about the relationship between Galileo and faith and science.
Well, the idea that there's some kind of a war or necessary conflict between science and religion, and science and Christianity in particular, doesn't really develop until the middle or even late 1900s. 1800s. Because frankly, there wasn't any. That is, most of the, almost all of the great scientists up until at least 1700 were Christians, and saw no conflict whatever between their beliefs in Christianity and their beliefs in science. So it's only in the latter part of the 1800s that that this idea of a war between Christianity and science evolved, and then it's been really played up in the last 10 or 15 years by very vocal atheists. I call them anti-theists because not only don't they believe in God, but they want to fight against the idea of God, so they're anti-theists. And they say, well, science and Christianity are incompatible. And, of course, then science will eventually replace Christianity. Then they go back and they select certain alleged incidents from the past. And two of the biggest myths there are, you mentioned them. One is the flat earth, the idea that Christians used to think that the earth was flat. Well, number one, I suppose there are people in every age and place that have thought the earth was flat. No doubt that uneducated people did think that. But the fact is that the sphericity of the Earth, that is, that the Earth as a globe, was established a few hundred years before Christ by the Greek philosophers, particularly by Eratosthenes, and then later on by Ptolemy. And those ideas were passed right down. The Christians accepted them throughout the Middle Ages and throughout the early modern period. For example, we have about 104 references from the Middle Ages, from the Christian Middle Ages, reference to the shape of the earth. And precisely 100 of them maintained that the earth is a globe. And then two or three weird outliers thought that it was flat. So then the idea is that there's this great confrontation between Christopher Columbus and the Inquisition. The Inquisition saying, well, he's a heretic, he's a liar, because he's saying that the earth is round. In fact, we all know it's flat. That's a complete myth, and it was begun basically in the 1830s by Washington Irving, the famous American writer of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow and various other stories. And he wrote some definitely fictionalized histories. One, History of New York, he wrote, which is almost completely fiction. Life of George Washington, which is mostly fiction. And A Life of Christopher Columbus, which is also mostly fiction. And this idea that Columbus had to face down a mob of ignorant Christians who said that he was crazy for thinking that the earth was round, completely false. There was no objection to Columbus on the part of any educated person on the grounds that the earth was really flat and that his ships would fall off the side. They The objection was perfectly reasonable. They said that it was too far for him to go from Spain or the Canary Islands to Japan, which is where he was planning to go, that the ocean was too wide for him to do that, which was absolutely correct. Their measurements of the Earth's circumference were more accurate than Columbus, who really fudged a lot in order to get the money to make this trip. So there's one example. People did not think that the Earth was flat, and that has got into it just creeps into articles and books and textbooks and teachers' guides and everything else. And it's so dramatic, and it's so easy to think, wow, everybody thought the Earth was flat until Columbus came along, and it's dramatic and easy to remember, but it's completely false.
So Washington Irving was a great storyteller, but not particularly a great historian. And yet he's being given credit for being a historian. There are some other things that you address, and they have to do with the relationship between the church and the arts. Not only is the church being blamed for being anti-science, it's also blamed for being anti-art and anti-literature. Or given the small caveat that, oh, the only reason there's all that Christian art is because they just paid for it all. So, of course, they draw pictures of Jesus because that's who's paying the bills. Once again, not true.
Well, not really. I mean, of course, there's a little bit of truth in that. Obviously, artists always look for ways of making a living. And if a bishop is asking you to make a picture of Jesus, it's like a... modern artist being asked to make some kind of an abstract drawing. If someone's going to pay for it, that's fine. There is some truth to that, obviously. But the implication is that the people who painted these pictures and built these cathedrals and wrote these wonderful poems like Dante's Divine Comedy, that those people didn't really believe what they were doing. They were just doing it because they were made to do so. And that's almost completely false. One very nice example of that is that in the medieval cathedrals that were built mostly in the 1000s down to the 1300s, 1400s, almost no work is signed. So that if these guys were out to publicize themselves, they would have made sure that their signature was on a statue or on a painting or whatever it was. And in fact, that very, very seldom happens. That for the glory of, these were made for the glory of God and not for the glory of either the artist himself or of the patron. Suppose he had gotten the money from a bishop. Well, but the bishop's name doesn't appear either. It's anonymous for the glory of God.
We're talking, in case you're just joining us, to Dr. Jeffrey Burton Russell, the author of Exposing Myths About Christianity, A Guide to Answering 145 Viral Lies and Legends. It's from IVP Books, a division of InterVarsity Press. Other myths and misconceptions and half-truths and outright lies claim, this is one of my favorite ones to debunk, the idea that religion causes more war and suffering than atheism does. And then I started putting a pencil to it and doing the math of how many regimes during the 20th century who were openly antagonistic toward the Christian faith, how many people they killed, versus the number of people we can verify that the Inquisition and witch hunts and so forth did. The answer to that is pretty startling, too.
Absolutely right. That's one of the weird arguments of the anti-theists, of the militant atheists now, is that, well, if we got rid of religion altogether, and they always focused on Christianity, but they include Jews and the Muslims, too, if we could just get rid of all this religious belief, then everybody would be peaceful and happy, and there wouldn't be any more wars and so forth. Not only is that kind of a silly idea to begin with, but it's contradicted by all the evidence. Yes, if you go back in the, 100 years between 1912 and 2012 here today and calculate the number of people killed in wars or by persecution and oppression and imprisonment and execution and so forth, you come out with, obviously all these figures are just estimates, but you come out with about 110 million people who suffered death under atheist regimes. And we look at the regime of Adolf Hitler, we look at the regime of Joseph Stalin, we look at Mao Zedong, we look at Pol Pot, and these are all in Cambodia, Pol Pot in Cambodia. These are all atheist rulers, and the suffering of people under those rulers is absolutely fantastic. 100 million, 110 million is a good estimate. Some estimates are even higher than that. But if you compare that, I think to all the, if you compare that, and this is just off the cuff comment, but if you compare that to all the people in the history of the world who were killed on account of religion, I think this one century of atheism would top that whole total by a long shot.
Well, what about all those people who say, who charge the church, especially the Catholic Church, with the Inquisition, with witch hunts, particularly in Europe, a little bit of that in America, not nearly as many people were killed in America in witch trials as they were in Europe. But you kind of get the general impression that for people who don't really do a much more than a shallow reading of history, that the church was slaughtering people left and right. Every time you turned around, the Inquisition was horribly torturing people and killing off thousands and hundreds of thousands of them. But the statistics that we have from the very careful records that were kept do not support this this accusation.
No, let's admit right in the beginning that there were many practices of the various Inquisitions that were bad, that were evil. I mean, torturing people under any circumstances is a bad thing to do, and that did occur under the Inquisitions. But, I mean, we have to be careful. Number one, there are lots of different Inquisitions. There wasn't just one great big Inquisition. And number two, the figures have been grossly exaggerated for the sole purpose of propaganda. Yes, you get figures up to 5 or 6 million people killed by the Inquisition. Inquisitions, because there were like the Roman Inquisition, the Spanish Inquisition, and various other smaller Inquisitions. So you got these millions of people killed by the Inquisition. In fact, there are probably, you know, and any number is too many, but there are probably about, you know, 60 or 70,000 over the years. And in fact, what people don't realize is that the Inquisition very often acted as a restraint on the mobs, the popular and local uprisings and persecutions, I should say, against alleged heretics and witches, because often you go to a locality and people would start circulating rumors, and pretty soon people would be accused of various crimes and often put to death right there on the spot, and sometimes then the cases were referred upwards. And the farther up they got, farther up the cases got, the more cases were dismissed. So you find that the Roman Inquisition, for example, and also particularly that, let's stick with that, but the Roman Inquisition dismissed a lot of cases and released a lot of people who were under accusation, because the Inquisition did insist it had certain procedures that don't fit our idea of law, that is you couldn't face your accusers, but they insisted on sifting through the evidence and seeing whether is there any real grounds to suppose that this person is guilty, and very often they release the person who is accused. And then when we come down to the punishments involved, everybody thinks of burning at the stake. Well, that did occur, and that is, even one person burned at the stake is one person too many. But ordinarily, the punishments were much lighter, including prayers of penance, sometimes short terms, or maybe sometimes longer terms of imprisonment, and very, very rarely burning at the stake. So the Inquisition is something we don't want to defend entirely, but
right.
It's so exaggerated by the opponents of Christianity as to be a real caricature.
I also read something, I want to say 2 years ago, a book about the Catholic Church and its influence on the Western culture and on the world. The author of that book, Dr. Rodney Stark, suggested that maybe there weren't nearly as many people killed by the Spanish Inquisition as the English, who had their own reasons for making the Spanish look as bad as possible at that particular point in time. Maybe they exaggerated the figures when they wrote books about it in English to make the Spanish nation look worse, too. That
Rod Stark is always very good at overturning existing prejudices. Quite right. After all, the English were basically at war with Spain for several hundred years, and English historians created what the Spanish called the Black Legend of Spain. That is, probably anything that the Spanish did was horrible, you know, and evil and despicable. And so, yes, you have this great prejudice among English-speaking historians. I mean, from England down into America, that's how awful the Spanish were, which, of course, is an enormous caricature.
One of the most dangerous misconceptions, I think, that you address in your book, Exposing Myths About Christianity, is that Christians believe that Christianity is one of a number of equally valid paths to God. The phrase that gets used or gets quoted a lot in modern parlance is, there are many paths to God, which is New Agey. And it sounds nice and inclusive, but if that's the case, then why do you need all these different religions? And if that's absolutely incompatible with Christian thought, Christian doctrine, which says that Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me." Well, that's a pretty exclusive kind of thing. And it doesn't say you have to be Jewish or Greek to believe that. It just says you have to believe in Jesus. And that, to me, that alone completely invalidates any kind of idea that other religions are equally valid in the eyes of God with Christianity.
Yes, in terms of the Bible and of Christian tradition in general over the ages, Christ is the only way to the Father, and you can't be a Christian without believing that. Now, there are a range of views on that. I mean, the strongest one would be that unless you're absolutely committed to Christ as the only way, then you're in deep trouble. You have to be very narrowly committed to Christ. And even from the earliest times of the church, there were sort of exceptions made to that. That is, what if you were living a perfectly good life in a place or in a time, for example, before Christ? What about all the Hebrew patriarchs? I mean, if you were living in a time before Christ, or in a place where nobody had ever heard of him, then you'd be not to be saved just because of your necessary ignorance. And they quickly got around that. And I think what we come up with today, in accordance with the Bible and Christian, is the idea that, yes, number one, no one can be saved except through Christ. But number two, Christ works in people who aren't necessarily accepting him overtly. That is, that Christ and the Holy Spirit are working at people who may not have committed themselves to Christianity, but whom Christ is actually leading to him, maybe over time, maybe at the end of their lives or whatever. And the third thing I think that Christians need to do to avoid sounding too harsh is that indeed a lot of religions do have a lot of wonderful insights, like Buddhism, for example, obviously Judaism, and that as Christians we can learn from them and discuss things with them and make our own Christianity richer by understanding what other religions believe. But that being said, the idea that all religions are equal is patently false, because the only way all religions could be equal is if they're all equally false.
Yeah.
Christianity makes certain claims that, I mean, you either believe it or you don't. And the fact that it can't be equal to other religions, because it uniquely claims Christ as the unique Savior.
There's a time for one more of these myths, and I think this is the one that I often hear too, and that is Jesus didn't claim to be divine, that Paul invented Christianity for whatever purpose. And this is, in a sense, it's the old Passover plot nonsense. Jesus never expected to be executed, and he didn't really rise physically, that it was just a spiritual kind of thing. The Bible is pretty clear on all of those counts.
Yes, it certainly is, and Christian tradition has always upheld that. In fact, historically, and in the very early years of the church in the first and second century, a vast number of Christians believed that Jesus was divine. Only a few claimed that he was only human. And of course, the church has always said that Christ is both human and divine. But if you had to choose, pretty well everybody was convinced that he was divine in the early centuries of the church, and only a few people, such as the Ebionites, believe that he was just human. Christ does claim to be divine. Perhaps the most striking of any of his comments to that effect is when he comments, "Before Abraham was, I am," but that shocked the Jews at the time. It's certainly no surprise, because the name of God as revealed to Moses is I Am. Mm. And so that Jesus said before Abraham was, that is sort of eternally, I Am, implying that he is God. So Jesus makes it clear that he is in a unique relationship with the Father. And then, as I say, almost all the Christian community assumes that and believes that. The idea that Paul invented Christianity is a old-fashioned and not very smart idea. It's as if Paul himself, even though he's right in the middle of the apostles and other people who had known Jesus personally, that Paul somehow invented something that Jesus and the apostles never thought, and that he promoted Jesus into a divine figure. Even some very respectable current Jewish scholars who aren't Christian at all have said that it's nonsense, that the idea that Paul invented these ideas is preposterous. I mean, the testimony of all the apostles and of the early church fathers affirmed the divinity of Christ. Paul certainly believed in it and promoted it, but he just certainly didn't invent it.
Jeffrey, we've run out of time, and there's a lot more information that you have in your book. We encourage people to get a copy for themselves of Exposing Myths About Christianity, A Guide to Answering 145 Viral Lies and Legends, from IVP Books, which is a division of InterVarsity Press. You can check their website, books.ivpress.com. And I want to thank Dr. Russell for being with us today. A very renowned church historian, does a wonderful job in layman's terms of laying to rest these misconceptions, myths, and outright lies. Thank you for making time to be with us today.
Thank you very much, Dave. I enjoyed the interview.
Great. Me too. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Bookshelf. Our very special guest, Dr. Jeffrey Burton Russell, the author of Exposing Myths About Christianity, A Guide to Answering 145 Viral Lies and Legends, from IVP Books. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station. Until then, thanks again for listening, and God bless. On The Bookshelf, copyrighted by Kirby Creative Services, Inc., used by permission of Troy Broadcasting Corporation.